The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., what he stood for, the work he did, the work that still needs to be done. In the second half of our program, we will hear from Dr. King himself, an excerpt from a speech that he gave in 1967, America's Chief Moral Dilemma. But first, here on the Local Edition, we have a special presentation that originally took place Thursday night in our community, an online event hosted by E.B. Crawford Public Library in Monticello. First, we will hear local actor Oliver King performing as Dr. Martin Luther King, and following that, excerpts from the discussion that followed with participants that include Sandra Johnson Fields of the Sullivan County Chapter of the NAACP.
So welcome to tonight's program, which is a dramatic reading of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. And my name is Mary Paige Lang-Klaus. I'm the director of the library. And we will, I'm going to turn it over to Oliver King, who is a wonderful dramatic, will do this wonderful dramatic reading for us tonight.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. 54 years ago, a great American, in whose symbolic shadow we stand today, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon of light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American would fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note, insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. it would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. And those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. And there will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of unspeakable horrors, of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating "for whites only." We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come from narrow jail cells, and some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with that faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, and so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists and its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day, right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. And this is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. And this will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring." And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mountain of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only this. Let freedom ring from the Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last." He was very somehow important to my family, somehow because of the last name. That became quite the thing in my neighborhood back in Harlem when I was growing up in Queens. So everybody was always joking, "Oh, you're related to Martin Luther King." And I started to say, "Yeah.
Might as well, yeah."
So at this point, I feel a close connection. I've always felt a connection. I was devastated that he died so early, so young. That was just devastating. You know, it was a rude awakening for a young person with that connection. It was like losing a member of the family. But I'm happy to be here, able to do this at this point in our history.
That was a very, very great rendition by Oliver King. And to really hear this speech again, this is 59. That was 1963. This is 59 years later. And when you look at that speech then and see what's happening now, what are some comparisons and some contrasts that we could make as you listen to that speech? Because I was thinking about that in my head. So I'd like to open it up to the floor to see what are some comparisons and some, you know, some contrasts and some comparisons that you could make.
I don't think we've come very far. I think it's heartbreaking. I think one of the differences is our demographics has changed in terms of, white men are not the majority. whites are not the majority in this country, or they will not be very soon. So that's a real possible space for growth and change. And then again, I am the eternal optimist. But I've got to hang on to something. And I think that there's, a real anti-racist movement and an understanding, as well as the other side. But anyway, that's some of my observations. One of the things that struck me was the whole nonviolent, commitment. He was so committed to nonviolence. And
when you look at how far we've come, it's not very. No. It's inches, if that. Mm-hmm. Because even though the laws supposedly have changed, look what's happening now with voter suppression. Mm-hmm. Even with microaggressions. The law may change, but that doesn't mean people change. And so those are some of the when I was listening to that speech that I was thinking about, the laws may have changed, but people are still the same, and it doesn't matter what the laws say. And then you have a Supreme Court now that's conservative. So what's that going to look like in reference to this same speech 10 years from now?
Absolutely. Yep.
Maybe we're seeing a little bit more clearly what James Baldwin would say in terms of how much, whites suffer with they certainly don't suffer like Blacks suffer. That's not what I'm trying to say, but just that our society as a whole suffers so much when, our Black brothers and sisters are being discriminated against and suffering. I mean, just what we saw in the Bronx with the fire, that's all that all comes from systemic racism and discrimination. And, Baldwin really put it so well when he said, this is a white problem. This is not, whites kind of say, no, this is a Black problem. No, this is a white problem. And when we see that as our problem, then maybe we'll do something or keep doing something, those of us who have been trying.
I know someone said before that, I'm not sure if it was you, Judy, that white men aren't the majority anymore, but they're still in control. And so the system are still in place because they're still in control. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what's happening, again, with politics that we're living right now. White men are still in control.
Again, that was Oliver King performing as Dr. Martin Luther King at an online event hosted by the Crawford Public Library Monticello, followed by excerpts from the discussion that followed that event on Thursday night. Huge thanks, as always, to Oliver King, and thank you to the E.B. Crawford Public Library for making this presentation available to us here on Radio Catskill. This is Local Edition. We'll be right back. This is Radio Catskill. Some lingering snow or flurries are possible tonight. Otherwise, it'll be cloudy. Overnight low will get down to about 18. Overcast tomorrow morning with some sun possible in the afternoon. High of 23. Tomorrow night, cloudy and cold. Overnight low down to 6. And looking ahead to Wednesday, it may get all the way up to 39, the upper 30s. And if so, enjoy it, because frigid weather is set to return in a big way by the end of the month. This is Radio Catskill. Welcome back to the Local Edition News and Information, keeping you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and we're celebrating Martin Luther King Day here on Radio Catskill. Been doing that all weekend, and we still have a few MLK specials coming up tonight at 9. We have Dr. King's speech, America's Chief Moral Dilemma, delivered May 17th, 1967 at UC Berkeley. We're going to close the local edition right now with an excerpt from that speech. Here's Dr. King, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Our nation has a great deal to do in using its vast resources of power to solve the problems facing our nation and facing mankind. And the other thing about this war in Vietnam is that it has increased the possibilities of all-out nuclear warfare, and therefore it has increased the possibilities of the destruction of all mankind. And I must say to you honestly this afternoon, and I'm sad to say it, but I fear that the clouds of the Third World War are hovering mighty low. And if there is a Third World War which can destroy the whole of mankind, our government will have to take the chief responsibility for making this a reality. And so I have a moral obligation to speak against this war, to take a stand wherever I can. And I want to commend all of you that have participated in some way. And I urge you to continue. This summer, there will be an opportunity for thousands of students to work in communities all over our nation in the kind of teach out, knocking on doors, talking with people about the war in Vietnam, giving them the facts about the war, developing statistics on the number of people opposed to the war. The aim is to build a powerful peace bloc that can really have influence in the 1968 elections. And we must make it clear that we aren't going to let our political forces and the politicians ignore Vietnam in 1968. This must be an issue if that tragic war is still going on. And so as the war hawks escalate the war in Vietnam, we must escalate our protest against the war. A reporter said to me the other day, Dr. King, don't you think you're hurting your influence? Don't you think by taking a stand against the war in Vietnam, you are losing many people who once respected you? They will no longer listen to you now. Don't you think you must kind of move back, go more toward the administration's policy? And I looked at this reporter and said, I'm sorry, sir, but you don't know me. I'm not a consensus leader. I went on to tell him that I do not determine what is right or wrong by going out taking a Gallup poll of the majority opinion. Ultimately, a genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. On some positions, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? Conscience asks the question, is it right? And there are times in life that you must take a stand that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but you take it because it is right. And that is where I stand. As I move toward my conclusion, let me say that there is a need in our country for a kind of creative discontent. There are certain technical words that are used in every academic discipline. They soon become stereotypes and cliches. Every academic discipline has its technical nomenclature. Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. And certainly we all want to live as far as possible the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But I must say to you this afternoon there are some things in our nation and in the world of which I'm proud to be maladjusted, and to which I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted until the good society is realized. I never intend to adjust myself to racial segregation and discrimination. I never intend to become adjusted to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. I never intend to adjust myself to the madness of militarism. But in a day when Sputniks and explorers and Geminis are dashing through outer space and guided ballistic missiles are carving highways of death through the stratosphere, no nation can win. That is a world war. We must come to see now that the alternative to disarmament, the alternative to a greater suspension of nuclear tests, the alternative to strengthening the United Nations and thereby disarming the whole world, may well be a civilization plunged into the abyss of annihilation, and our earthly habitat will be transformed into an inferno that even the mind of Dante could not envision. It may well be that our world is in dire need of a new organization, the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment.
An excerpt of Dr. King speaking at UC Berkeley in May 1967, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives. You can hear the full speech coming up tonight at 9 right here on Radio Catskill. At 8, it's King's Last March, and that's a documentary focusing on the work that King did in the final year of his life, a period that includes the excerpt that we just heard. But first, it's this year's MLK special from WNYC, their 16th annual this year, talking about MLK activism and the arts, talking about Dr. King working with the arts community and influencing the arts and vice versa. It's all still come to hear tonight on Radio Catskill. Thank you for listening to the local edition.
Support comes from the Homestead School, Montessori education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville. Building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. Homesteadschool.com. From the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York. RiverReporter.com. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Daryl Brogdon. We're at the Underground Martini Bunker again to hear the music that's always shaken, not stirred. We're here with the Retro Cocktail Hour every week on WJFF Radio Catskill in Jeffersonville, New York. And you are most welcome to join us.
Wednesday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. We are Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Sun River Health, providing accessible health care at over 40 community locations across the Hudson Valley, New York City, and Long Island. The care you need, the respect you deserve. Sun River.